Welcome to the MattCast. I'm your host, Matt Chandler, here with my incredibly interruptive co-host, Matt Williams.
That's me.
We're here again with our buddy Chance Perry, the one, the only. And we're talking more about finances and continuing our conversation from our last episode. So I'm pretty excited about hearing more about net worth.
Net worth. Yeah, coming straight from the mouth of Chance Michaels Perry.
Michaels Perry.
Yeah, Michael. The figure skater?
Just hit the button.
Wow, this is the MattCast. Maybe.
We're back, coming off of our budget-focused financial series. Or rather, this is the financial series we previously had recorded, a budget-focused episode. We're going to transition to net worth because I did figure that it was going to take up the entire episode. I had a lot of good material there. This one I'm really excited about because this, at least for, I think, us three sitting at the table is probably most relevant.
Sure.
And just going to give some pointers, feedback of how we can make a healthy transition from that budget to net worth. Chance.
No pressure, huh?
Right.
No pressure.
Well, you know, the last time we were together, I think we talked about my accounting courses that I took in college and the different financial statements that I learned there. The income statement pertains to that budget. And that's the, you know, income minus expenses. And the balance sheet is actually the move to a net worth focus. That's your assets minus liabilities. In fact, that's going to be your definition of net worth. What do you own? What are your assets? Subtract out what do you owe? What are those liabilities? And you're left with net worth. That's what it is.
Is there a graphic of your balance sheet that we might be able to reference and put it online?
You want to know if I can give my balance sheet?
Yeah, we want to see your personal tax returns and your balance sheets.
Not yours. I'm just saying, is there a generic graphic that we could post online?
We also need your social security number, your driver's license number.
So that people can visually see what a balance sheet looks like.
Sure. It is basically just a T. It's a cross. If you Google balance sheet, that's what you're going to find. Assets on one side.
Okay.
And liabilities on the other side.
I'm Googling it right now. I, myself, am Googling.
Or Bing or whatever search engine you may
please
use.
Bing. All right. So balance sheet. Let's see. Images. Or is it a soft E? Images?
That's the French pronunciation.
And I'm looking for a T?
Sure. You're going to look for that division between assets and liabilities. There's a line right down the center that's showing it. It should have assets on one side and liabilities on the other. Have you found that?
For the sake of the show, I'm going to say yes. Okay, so I'm envisioning a T asset. Okay, I did find it. Assets on one side, liabilities on one side, on the other. So on the assets column, what's some stuff I might put into that?
You know, people have different ways of thinking about assets. I kind of like the author Robert Kiyosaki's version of that.
Is he American?
He is Hawaiian and Japanese. Born in Hawaii.
I would have thought something more like, you know, he was from Cleveland or something, but okay.
Right.
Yeah.
With the name like that.
Exactly.
Of course.
Yeah.
So he's an author. He's written a couple books. In fact,
more than a couple, but yes.
You've sent me You straight up mailed me one of his books years ago, and Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
That was one of the first, I believe, for him, and that kind of started his groundwork and philosophy. So that was a beginning book for Kiyosaki, yep.
Yeah, and that was nice of you to hand out free books. I wonder, you're just going to keep that mold up? And just
I've given that one out quite a bit, actually. I checked with my teenager yesterday to see if she read her copy of it, and the answer was no.
Yeah. Imagine that.
This is free advertisement for Kawasaki as well, please. So, you know, check his book out.
They're like, Dad, everybody's doing audiobooks now. It's like, come on, man.
Kiyosaki.
Yeah, that's what I said, Kawasaki.
So, Mr. Robert K., let's just keep it there.
I like that.
His version of this, you said, you were talking about that.
Yeah, he talks about how an asset puts money into your pocket. Okay, so it makes you money. A liability takes money out of your pocket.
Mm. Is a car an asset?
Well, does it take money out of your pocket? I'll put it in. Pay for the car.
I was about to say, I got to buy the car, and then especially driving this beautiful asset that I just bought, that F-250, those oil changes are rather expensive.
I bet
going
they are.
In the red on that guy.
Wow.
So to answer your question, right now it's costing me a fortune.
Yeah, there's maintenance, there's fuel, there's insurance, there's maybe a note if you financed it.
So I would think that's a pretty common misconception that the car is an asset.
It could be, I guess, if you're an Uber driver.
Nice.
Mm.
Nice. So it's, I know you said this earlier, I'm trying to reiterate the concept. It's got to be making you money for it to be in the asset column.
That is right.
That's a great definition. For all you simple-minded people like me out there.
I was like, clean that up. I was like, clean it up. Simple-minded people like me. okay, so we're not going to put the car in there. What about that brand new house I just bought?
Is it making you money?
Ooh, that question again. This guy repeating the same question.
The best ones they usually do, like Kawasaki.
Is it making me money? Well, it's not an Airbnb, so I guess not. So you're telling me I can't put my house in that asset column because it's not making me money? Okay.
Technically, it's costing you money. You have to pay to live there. It's like rent. Mm-hmm. It's like an expense.
That's right.
Expenses are derived from liabilities. Your house is a liability.
Man, because all my life, everybody's been like, you should, you know, buy your house, your big dream forever home now, yeah, in your ripe old age of 30 and secure that asset. But I guess I can't put that in the asset column now.
No, if you were leasing it out to someone else and it was, right, bringing in money and paying for itself, then it would be an asset. Like you mentioned Airbnb, if you had some part of the house or outdoor space that you were Airbnb-ing out, then yeah, it could be.
Wow. Okay. So,
my buzzkill.
My asset column is not looking great right now.
So, to help with that, I mean, something that you could focus on building wealth is the secret to doing so is really just buying assets and avoiding liabilities.
I really thought you were going to say playing the lottery, but that sounds better what you said.
I don't know the statistical probability of winning the lottery.
I don't think it's very good.
But I think you may be better off just buying assets and avoiding liabilities.
I think you're right.
So it's the intentional action of buying something that will be making you money. That goes in my asset column.
That's correct. That should help to build the net worth, right? Because your assets minus your liabilities equals your net worth. You know, there's something out there that's known as a family office. Have you guys ever heard of that before?
I have.
And
for the sake I of actually show. Haven't, so please educate.
Oh, there you go.
So what's your idea of the family office, Dan, Mr. Williams?
It's a great idea. It's a central location where all the family members can come in and just hang out at the family office.
That's not exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah. So it's generally families that have investment portfolios that are managed by either a family member or actually other people that are brought in. So professionals that do this for a living, they manage the funds for this group. a lot of grandfathered families, you know, your old, like, Rockefeller-type families, they have set up family offices. They invest in, whether it's real estate or other platforms of investment, they have these investments. There's so much that they have a nominated group of people that manage these offices. So
yeah, that's right. And their sole purpose is to increase the net worth of that family. Now, historically, you saw net worths of the family around $100 million before you saw a family office come into place. But lately, it's been as low as about $30 million.
Right.
But the reason why I bring that up is because I think if that's what we think of rich people, and what they're doing is they're focused, even to the degree of hiring employees to come and focus on for them, increasing their net worth. Why don't we focus on that? And so that's a path that I started exploring and going down, is like, what if I ran my family office?
Right.
Right? And even though I don't have that much in assets, I don't actually, you know, have the family office. I just pretended I did and started looking at my balance sheet and saying, how can I increase my net worth? And that's the way of thinking that I've been pursuing.
Yeah, there's no, I mean, because when you put it that way, there's no reason why you shouldn't think in this mindset. Like, that's gonna secure a brighter future. That's gonna you have to get, so if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, finances, you have to get past the point of avoiding financial conversation.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
The only way you grow as a person is to communicate. The only way you overcome problems is to communicate and find solutions. The only way, if finances are never fun for you, the only way that you're going to break through these boundaries is communication. Ideally, right, with people that aren't going to bring you down. You don't, what someone once told Chance and I during a meeting, they were like, you don't partner down, you partner up.
Mm.
And that brings you to your next level. You always surround yourself with people that are either better at things than you are, maybe even have a more positive attitude than you are, that are smarter than you are.
I like that. It's riding the coattails of someone else. I like that.
That's right.
That's my life philosophy, you know. Hey, so I just want to summarize, just for, again, the simple-minded people. Net worth is not just the stuff you have, right? It's more than that. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you have a high net worth because you have a high income either, right? Because you have a bunch of stuff tied up into a lot of liabilities. So just because you make a lot doesn't necessarily mean you're worth a lot.
Yeah. Somebody, and just the other day, somebody was talking to me about a house that they were looking at purchasing. And they told me the details of the house. And I said, if you want my honest opinion, that would be a no for me. And his response was, well, I've always wanted to own my own house. And I said, well, if you do that, you're locking yourself in. You're not giving yourself flex room. It's great to want to own your own property, but you've got to make these moves that are going to allow you to still be productive. And you're going to accomplish that goal. There was more to the house. He was going to secure the house at a very high price and still have to do his own rehab after the purchase. Yeah. So it wouldn't have been. Right now, this person was renting. His landlord was responsible for the repairs and maintenance of it, which they were taken care of, but essentially I was like, what you're doing is you're bailing out your landlord to where he doesn't have to fix it up, but you're also helping your landlord out by securing securing the house at the top market.
So it's a win-win for the landlord, but not for him.
Win-win for the landlord, not for him.
Yeah.
And so just general advice like that. So surround yourself with people that might be in the field of things that you're experiencing right now, that have a more productive outlook, not necessarily positive, but more productive, successful way of handling business than you currently do.
You know, something I see pertaining to that is that a lot of people, when they're focused on buying assets and you know, growing that net worth, they start asking, is borrowing okay? And last episode, I know we talked about Dave Ramsey and his philosophies where he says, no, you know, debt is bad. But as a new way of thinking or a new question to be posed is good, is there such thing as a good debt? And I think that there is. I think that bad debt is debt that you can accumulate that you are responsible for paying off. It's like a consumption or a liability.
Right.
But good debt is debt that your assets pay off, not you.
That's right.
And there's a system behind that to where if you don't actually have to work to make the payments to that, then you're not trading your time for money. You're not experiencing a decreased net worth as a result of that. It's an increased net worth. So there is good debt. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
Yeah, I want to paint that picture to make sure everybody understands. So there's the debt of consumption. So if you're, I was going to use a laptop as an example because my first debt on this planet was a laptop. I purchased a laptop straight out of high school to go to college, and it was $3,000. It was, of course, the best laptop I could get. It was Sony, blah, 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 blah. That was my first, but it was a consumption. I was using it for school. I did not need a $3,000 laptop. I literally bought it that much because I had the cash, and there was a game that had come out that I wanted to play with my buds while I was in school.
Wow. That was questionable on if you did need it.
Oh, yeah. I did not need no.
You needed to play the game.
I needed to play the game. That's right. I could have totally gotten by with a $700 laptop, but I didn't. So, but that's a consumption debt.
Sure.
I would say a healthy painting of good productive debt is it goes into the deal, okay? It goes into understanding the deal. So if you're securing an asset, if you're, let's say a house, you're buying a house. In this house, you know your returns because everything falls on the deal. That's where your risk is. That's where you're making your money. That's right. So you really need to understand the deal. So if you're buying this house and you know it's going to be making you 26% return, okay, after you've paid your insurance, after you've paid your taxes, what you're renting it out for and your note, what you're renting it out for, if you're getting a 26% return, rather than exhausting all of your personal money, your capital on buying this all cash, does it make sense to take a loan out at a 6.5%? So 6.5%, you're cutting into your, even though I said it included your mortgage from the first time, but you're cutting into your 26%. So now you're back to 18%. Is that okay? Would you rather do that, or would you rather put your money in a 401k market that might make an 8% return?
Well, the short answer is that absolutely it's okay. I mean, we're saying, you know, that bad debt is going to make you poor, like purchasing the laptop so that you can play the video game. That's not going to make you rich, but good debt does make you rich. I mean, to expand on that, though, think of arbitrage. If you're able to take, let's say, $1 million from a bank at that 6.5%, but you're able to go invest it and earn 26%, so you make the spread at 18% on $1 million. What's that number? 180 grand. Would you want to do that? Absolutely. I mean, I would like to make 180 grand.
I think
grand.
I would. I just feel safer with my money in my 401k.
Well, I will say that I can talk to people and help them to manage their money, but I am not Dr. Phil. I cannot help them manage their emotions.
Right. Go ahead.
Well, James. I was just going to say, what are some more specific, because I know people that may be listening to this thinking, okay, well, tell me some more specifics about what bad debt is. You know, is it a car loan? Is it a payday loan? You know, what are some more examples of bad debt? And I mean, obviously we talk about real estate being the type of real estate you can invest in could be a really good debt to get into if it's working for you. But what are some of the flip sides so that people maybe in the middle of that can realize, hey, this wasn't a good idea and this is not working for me to increase my net worth?
The most, I think, big ticket item we already covered. We talked about the vehicles. A lot of people go overspend on vehicles that aren't solving the purpose, and they really, didn't think about the fact that it's a it's even known as a depreciating asset. Doesn't meet the criteria that we stated earlier as far as putting money in your pocket. But that means the value of the thing is decreasing so fast that after you get it paid off one day, you don't have much left. There's not a lot of meat on the bone or much value left that you have anything worth anything. So that's a big one. I think clothes, a trip to the mall costs a lot of money. Things like electronics. We just talked about a laptop, TV, furniture, home decor, you know, any other personal property. Things that you're carrying around with you from the house into the vehicle. Or if you just turned your house upside down and shook it, all that stuff that comes out.
So can I throw this out there for just a second? This may be kind of off topic, but when it comes to talking about, we're dealing with our finances here, you know, personal finances, increasing our net worth is, so if I understand what you're saying, living very minimalistic is key so that you can spend your money on things that make lasting impacts, make memories, things like that.
It's possible that living in a minimalistic way will help free up enough income so that someone could invest that into assets and then really change the landscape of their life for a future date. I don't think minimalistic living is the goal for anyone over a long period of time. It may be something that's necessary to facilitate an opportunity to start
so
moving.
So live now like no one else so you can live later like no one else.
Exactly. I do agree with that.
To go off of your question, so the same was asked about in the spirit of giving at one point in time, and I'd like to relate the same. So if you set up your finances to where you aren't stretched on cash so much that when someone you care about needs help, you can't help them because you're like, bro, I'm so strapped on cash. Like I can't do anything right now. So it's a balance of a healthy living to where, it's kind of characteristics of the heart, but you want to balance yourself to where if the opportunity comes, you find a good deal, you have the opportunity to invest. The same as in your personal finances, the opportunity comes to where you want to bless somebody, you have the opportunity to bless them. So it's a healthy lifestyle of finances.
And expanding on that concept, if I can, it's that you're saying to have the resources, the financial resources, but what about the time resources? Because ultimately,
that's right. The
goal is freedom of not just financial freedom, but time freedom as well. And that's why I think about going into assets and going through that is that if you decrease your standard of living to just keep it within reason so that you have the ability to invest in these assets and you continue to do that to a point that they're kicking off enough income to cover your expenses every month, that's now financial freedom, which means that you do not have to trade your time for money at a job. And now your time's there. So if someone needs that assistance or needs something from you that you can help and benefit that person, you're now not so focused on working these 65 hours this week that you're even going to recognize that they need support or need help from you.
Yeah. Even if it's on a passive investment level, if you have money, making money, and this is not a foreign concept, people have been doing this for a very long time. It's not evil. Money is just a tool to use. So the concept of money making money is foreign to people because their concept of money is time for money. That's what they've been having to do their whole life. They're having to give their time to earn money. The concept of money making money doesn't exist to some people. And once you can understand that money can make you money, even on a passive level, that's when you don't get so stressed out that you have to take every overtime that's offered to you, that you can start to actually be home on the weekends and enjoy time. You don't have to miss every softball practice because you're working 4 hours over every day.
Yeah, I like to think of it as laying my head on my pillow at night, getting some rest, and my money is out there and they're little soldiers. and they're working and they're battling. And when I wake up in the morning, they're bringing this store of gold that they worked for me all night long.
Little minions. Yeah, I like that.
Little Benjamins out there. Look at him go. Little Franklins. Go, Benjamin.
But it's a great place to be, right?
Yeah, right. Look at Abraham. He's so tall. He's taller than everybody else out there.
So CNBC released this year some stats on net worth for the average U.S. family.
Oh, I'm interested.
And for millennials, the average net worth is $11,100.
Okay.
The next age bracket goes up to $60,000. Then you're at the next bracket, 45 to 54, you're around $125,000. The next age bracket, 55 to 64, is $187,000. 65 to 74 is $224,000. And then the highest bracket, the oldest age bracket, is at $264,000.
That is,
yeah, I expected more of a
shocking,
more of a,
that's the average. And this was from May of this year, 2019, from CNBC and their study.
Maybe we should spend more time on this subject.
I'm
baffled.
Yeah.
I really did expect more of a, like an exponential growth there.
Wow. 11,000. Was that the millennial?
That's based on the average. That's the average based on the age of the head of household. So, that, yeah, 11,000 was the 35 and under bracket, which is your millennial fits in that bracket as well.
That really means that they don't have that much equity inside a vehicle, minus their, you know, considering personal property,
mm-hmm. right?
Anything around that mark. That's just tough to even think about that.
Yeah, so if you're a millennial, or even it sounds like if you're anybody in those age brackets, what are ways that somebody can get connected to increase their net worth if they don't have the time to go out and do things themselves? Are there healthy ways to increase net worth?
Well, sure. I mean, that's what we were talking about last time, right? It's the following the budget to, and having enough margin to where you're living within your means and you're setting back some funds for things like investment. That's sowing the seed, right? That's what's going to change the trajectory of your life and what you're doing with your finances. So that's part of the budget. And then looking at these things, this is really some simple accounting statements, and really, I do not like accounting, guys. I really avoided those courses in college, and kind of changed my major as a result of it because I just didn't like them. But if we could keep it to those two statements, the income statement and the balance sheet, we can expand, and we should begin with an income statement. That's your budget that we talked about, and then going into the balance sheet, just look at. You know, looking at assets, something that's going to yield income. I mean, it's as simple as a stock that has dividends and pays right. dividends. That's an income producing asset, and you can get into that with, you know, minimal entry, up to some larger things that you can put some money into, maybe a promissory note or something that's going to yield an annual return that's higher than what you're getting at the bank right now. It's not hard to do,
right?
Because there's not much that's happening there. I mean, the interest rates are at 75-year rate lows right now. There's just not much benefit there,
right?
And that's not the kind of income that I'm talking about that you see from certificates of deposit.
Yeah. So used to you, and it's still a conversation, but I don't think people have really looked into it very much and looked at their current rates. But it's like, what can I get for a CD right now? Like, you know, what percentages are there? So if I have $20,000 that I want to pull out of my savings, first of all, if we didn't cover that on the budget side, the savings part, that's probably the third key on the budget. You have your identifying your income, your expenses, and then everything else goes to savings. So your standard percent on a savings account is what?
Rates just dropped again last week. I don't know where we are, but I don't think we're going to get a whole lot more than one. I think a banker recently offered me like 2%, and it was a really great deal.
Right, yeah. They were pretty – I was there for that. They were pretty excited about that 2% offering. Which, I understand, but what I'm saying is you're going to get 2% of your money. Is the inflation of America going to outrun that 2% of your money sitting in savings?
That's a great question. I mean, right now, it's not actually occurring. I believe there's some market factors that are contributing to that, and so we may not be above that point at this point in the market, but there's a lot of indication to believe that it's going to rapidly outpace that, and so that means you would actually be going backwards on your purchasing power if inflation is eating up the rate of interest that you're earning on an account like that.
Right. So that's another misconception, that people think their money is safe sitting in a bank account, in a savings account, earning their 2% is probably the max right now. So earning their 1-2%. So you also got to consider the economics at play here and how that trend looks in the future. I just got my I got my time finger. but so it is the importance of self-education, economics. I know sometimes it's not fun, but there are things that you can look at. There's something called the mastermind, which is pretty much a group of individuals that come together. If you get involved on a mastermind, make sure it's people that show success. It's not just someone that talks a good game and doesn't have anything to show for it. These people have the best interest in mind with everybody that's included in that group. So that's called a mastermind. Get connected with a mastermind. It helps you make decisions. I know universities like A&M, they focus on a mastermind. I don't know if they call it mastermind, but even after graduation, you're still connected to a mastermind. That's kind of when you see all these other wealthy individuals, whether or not they call it a mastermind, they have a closed group of individuals that they come together with, and they don't necessarily, some might make decisions together, but they definitely discuss openly finances. It's an open conversation.
Yeah.
That term mastermind, you know where it comes from?
I do.
It's your boy.
That's right.
Napoleon.
Napoleon Hill. That's right. Talked about it in the first few episodes. But yeah.
What he talks about there, just real quick, is that it dives into the definiteness of purpose. Each person has their goals plainly written down that they can follow, and when there's a convergence of those purposes, when they come together, that's a mastermind group that can accomplish those things. But that's biblical, to write down
your vision,
to put it down and being intentional about following that.
That's right. I love hearing those references. I really do.
Yeah.
But that's Napoleon Hill.
Not Dynamite.
Not Dynamite Hill. That book that primarily references, he has a couple of books that reference the mastermind, but the primary reference is called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. It's not only about money. Essentially, the takeaway, the secret is a little bit different for everybody, but for me, it was the intentionality of writing down your goals, to be very specific about the goals you want to accomplish and making them part of your habit every day. And subconsciously, that's your mind's going to be open to opportunities to help you achieve those goals. I done lost my place.
Well, I was going to say, too, I don't know if we got too deep into this, but considering that the average American household is like $140,000 in debt, maybe getting rid of some of that bad debt is a good first place to start
in for sure
building your net worth.
That's right. Yeah, we're getting back to how we can build our net worth. Sorry, I tangent over there. But yeah, so taking care of your debt, I would say if you're at a place where you can't financially do anything, some safe places to start would probably be Dave Ramsey. Do you second that? Or
that's absolutely right. Okay. I mean, that was a good foundational part of where you know, he's guiding people into creating this budget and getting a hold of your finances and starting to create that margin in your plan.
Yeah, there's definitely growth and maturity after Dave Ramsey. That's not the sorry, Dave, if you're listening. That's not the end all. That I think that's here's the basics, and then there's definitely steps to take after that. But that foundation will be there. That way, you know, if you're overstretching yourself, you're like, hey, let me get back to the basics.
And you know, Matt, that was a good question about paying off the debt. I think that, you know, if you're following the Dave Ramsey plan, he's going to direct you to that. I would say that you got to be very careful about what you direct your cash to do. Because if your goal is to just simply direct it to go pay off debt, it could take a long time to go pay off $140,000 worth of debt. In an sure. environment where right now the interest rates are as low as they are, you may have a vehicle that you're into for $20,000, say, but it's financed at 2 or 3%. If you can go and make these 26% rates, that's, again, going toward that arbitrage and just thinking about how this money works. I would say direct your cash to get the 26%. Let that asset then pay for that debt. Does that make sense?
That bad debt. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so get everything on paper. Don't shy away from this. Get everything on paper. If you and your spouse look at this, have an open mind. Don't get weird about it. Don't start raising your voice. I know people sometimes get weird about finances. Put everything down on paper. Look at your high interest rates. Look at what's on your low interest rates. Look at what's bad debt. Look at what's good debt. Get everything organized, and that's when you can make your informed decisions.
Yeah. And so just to recap, net worth is your total assets minus your total liabilities, right? And it determines where you are, and then you can see where you want to go from there. And then partner with someone to help you make some strategic moves to let your little soldiers work for you and bring home that gold.
Go, Abraham.
Yeah, that's right.
Benjamin.
So, Chance, thanks for coming and talking with us. And I hope you can come back and talk some more about this stuff. And I think we'll put some resources on the matcast.us that you can get involved in and at least get directed in some places to find some help, resources to get you connected with some investment opportunities and things of that nature.
I want to throw something at Chance real quick before we close up. Would you be open to an insurance discussion?
Sure, I'm open to any discussion that I can help with, actually. But, I mean, insurance, that's been with me for 14 years or so now, so it's natural for me to have conversations like that. So you mean with you guys?
No, like on the show.
Yeah. So yeah, that sounds great. I think should be fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, thanks for tuning in, guys. Remember to subscribe, follow, share with your friends. This is the Matcast.